This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer for this program. Jason Croft is at the controls this hour. And Kyle Mabry was on for hour number one. In this part of the show, we will spend some of our time talking about media, particularly what sometimes people refer to as the old media. And we're one of those. Broadcasters are among them. So are newspapers. Newspapers today, particularly, are facing some very tough challenges, particularly those that are located in big cities. Circulation has been declining. The internet has taken away a lot of advertising revenue. And papers, and also broadcasters, are struggling to figure out how best to survive in this new media landscape. Well, that's one of the things that we'll be talking about this morning in this part of Focus. Our guest is Mizell Stewart III. He is editor of the Evansville Courier and Press newspaper that's located in Evansville, Indiana. And he is a veteran journalist who's been involved in covering a number of very big stories, among them the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and also the deadlocked presidential election of 2000. He is visiting the campus to talk. He'll be, in fact, giving a talk about a lot of these same issues about media today. He'll be giving a talk, and this is sponsored by the College of Media, as you might expect. And it's a public lecture open to anybody who would like to attend it, talking about the changing financial picture of local news. That's this afternoon at 3:30 on the campus of the University of Illinois in Gregory Hall, room 213. And if you would like to stop by, I'm sure anybody would be welcome. Here on the program, questions, comments are welcome too. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We also have email. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. So any point here in the conversation, folks are welcome to call. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. In media nowadays, and this conversation has been going on for some time now, people are saying, well, the way that we used to do it, particularly the way that we used to finance the operation, just doesn't work anymore. And in newspapering, particularly, it used to be the case that you could manage to make the newspaper go by what people would pay to buy a physical copy of the paper and also what advertisers would give you, either people who had a business and they wanted to advertise or, you know, someone was having a garage sale, so they want to put an ad in the paper. And that was enough. Well,
It's not enough anymore.
Circulation is down. Now, that may not mean that fewer people are reading the paper, but in terms of copies of the thing that's printed on paper, fewer of those. And it certainly is true that the internet has sucked off a lot of advertising. So the big challenge for papers big and small is, how do we survive?
One of the dirty little secrets of the newspaper business is that subscribers and readers have never truly paid for journalism. Advertising carries the freight for the modern local media organization. And so whether it's the News Gazette here in Champaign, where my good friend John Beck is the executive editor, to the New York Times, to the Chicago Tribune, the newsroom is financed through advertising. Right now, when you look at the breakdown of revenue for the typical newspaper company, what you pay to have a subscription to the physical newspaper essentially pays for the paper, the ink, the carrier profit, and the reimbursement of that carrier for the gasoline that it takes to bring that physical copy of the newspaper to your door. And so as advertising has transformed from analog to digital, newspaper revenues have transformed as well.
Well, what can you say about these two things that, in a sense, are linked but different? Circulation and readership. So in circulation, you always knew that those two things really weren't the same thing. Well, now particularly that so many papers are putting content online, what really is going on with those two things?
Well, we'll look at readership from the in the context of the physical print newspaper as well as online. Mm-hmm. First, as it relates to the physical newspaper, you go to a McDonald's. McDonald's oftentimes you will see copies of the newspaper in McDonald's that somebody has purchased, somebody has left for others to read. That is readership. One of the metrics that has been utilized in the industry is that the average physical copy of a newspaper is read by up to three people. And so whether it is a newspaper going to a household and that's read by several members of that household, whether there is a newspaper that's passed around the office, there is a significant pass-along readership. So even people who don't subscribe to a copy of the newspaper delivered to the home or pick up a single copy at a gas station or a kiosk, they come across a copy of the newspaper while having lunch at a restaurant and will page through. So we all know that just by general behavior, there is that. And then there is online, and then there's online readership. And I often say that the issues befalling local journalism have nothing to do with audience and everything to do with revenue. And it has everything to do with the internet, in that the internet has exposed the work of local journalists to larger audiences than ever before. We reach more people in my community in Evansville, Indiana, in southwestern Indiana, and also circulates and reaches five counties in southeastern Illinois. We reach more people now than we ever have in our history, and that's through the benefit of digital distribution. And so at any given time, we may reach on a daily basis, circulate 55,000 copies of the newspaper, but then reach another 70 to 100,000 through our digital products.
Yeah. I'm just curious about what you know about reading, the reading patterns, reading habits, and the age of individuals, just because there's sort of this commonplace that says that the newspaper reading habit is something that we don't see in younger people. Now, obviously, there is a lot of interest among younger people in news.
Absolutely.
And they are looking for news, and they're reading news. They may not read it off a printed page, but they're reading it. What do we know about that kind of, you know, news-seeking behavior in people for whom readership of the physical paper is just not part of their life?
Well, what we know anecdotally is that readership of physical newspapers is an ingrained habit. And I often joke that the demise of the physical newspaper actually began when newspaper companies stopped having young people work as newspaper carriers, because you're of the generation, I'm of the generation where when we were growing up, you got to be 9, 10, 11, 12 years old. The first job you got was often delivering the local newspaper. And as a young person being exposed to the newspaper, even in that way, we had newspapers in the house, we had newspapers at the bus stop, and newspaper reading was a habit in the home that was passed down to the children. And so as newspaper readership has declined among parents, it has been picked up less and less among young people. And so what we often see is a generational divide, where my readers will say to me, Mizell, I know that the newspaper is going through changes, but the printed newspaper is a habit for me. Please don't take it away from me. But my children are not reading the newspaper. Now, what has happened? Technology being chief among them, in that we are now in an era where we're literally surrounded by information. The newspaper is often like the evening network news. In other words, the newspaper comes at a certain time of day and has all of the information from that snapshot in time. Well, between 24-hour cable news networks, between the internet and RSS feeds and information being delivered on mobile devices, there is a news flow now that really goes against the kind of appointment reading that a print newspaper really represents. And so that is where the generational shift has taken hold. And really, we see that divide statistically right now coming in the mid-30s. You talk to people who are in their mid-30s and below, they tend not to be print newspaper readers. You talk to people who are in their mid-30s and above, they tend to be print newspaper readers. And those print newspaper readers are not being replaced.
Yeah. The I'm sure that there's also a difference in how people use the product, or I expect that there would be a difference in how people use the product in this sense, that the paper itself, you all, the editors, sit down and you decide what's going to be in the paper at any particular day. And you're trying to make a decision about, judge by traditional journalism standards, what are the important stories? What should people know? What do they want to know? And put that together in a package every day, and you hand it to people and say, okay, here you go. Now, people, either they can read a story or not, but it does come in this package. One of the things about delivering it in an electronic way, and there are also ways that people can shape the product, is that they're going to be much more selective. They can exercise a lot more control, not over just what they read, but even what gets delivered to them. And, you know, there are plenty of apps nowadays that allow you to make your own newspaper.
In a university community, in the early communications courses, students are taught the concept of gatekeepers. In other words, there are individuals in the media, yourself as a talk show host, myself as a newspaper and website editor, who make judgments about the information that the audience gets to see. Well, we are really in an era where the gatekeepers have been pushed to the side because the internet provides quite literally infinite choice. And so what we diehards in the media called editing in a digital context is known as curation. You're literally looking at everything that can be. You're literally looking at all of the information that is coming through on a given day, and selecting those things that you find are going to be interesting, appealing, and things that matter. Really, on a day-to-day basis, in a typical local media organization office such as mine, we blend the two. In other words, there is still that point in the news cycle where, for the purposes of the print newspaper, we have to stop and say, this is what the news is going to be. By the same token, there is also a parallel digital operation that is constantly curating, that's constantly pushing out information. We've got a homepage on a local website that is literally changing, six times an hour with updated information. You would not recognize, if you've been, were in a newsroom of the late 1980s compared to a newsroom of 2011, you wouldn't recognize the flow because it is constant. The danger in that, and that's what we have to guard against, is, are we investing enough time in investigating the issues of our community? Are we spending enough time to peel away the layers, to get beyond the surface, to tell the stories about what's really going on in the community, as compared to just feeding this constant churning digital beast? Yeah. And that really is the balancing act that takes place.
Well, do you, and again, if you make that kind of comparison, the newsroom of 1980 and the newsroom of 2011, as you think about how you think about making assignments, what stories you're going to cover, are you thinking differently now about that than you did in 1980?
I don't think so in this regard, and it is this, that the value of the what I would call not so much old media, I prefer legacy local media. I prefer to refer to it that way. There's a reason we have the resources that we have, and I believe firmly that one of the reasons we have those resources is to be that organization that focuses perhaps much more squarely on public policy issues in a community, whether it be with our local reporters, whether it be with our correspondent in Washington, D.C., whether it be with our correspondent in the state capitol, and that we've tried to maintain despite the economic pressures. But the economic pressures have forced us to make choices, and we've made a conscious choice to really focus on those important issues to some extent at the expense of the medical study of the moment story. There was a while when newspapers had medical report, local medical reporters, and really aggressively tried to deal with issues of the medical study of the moment. You know what? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a luxury that we could do 20 years ago. We can't do that. We can't do that anymore. So it's really that if there's been any real change in decision making, it's been how are we going to focus our energies to remain relevant despite the economic pressures that we're dealing with? And our choice to a large extent has been to focus much more squarely on public policy than we had before.
Mm-hmm. Our guest in this hour of focus is Mizell Stewart III. He is editor of the Evansville Courier and Press newspaper in Evansville, Indiana. He's been there since 2007. Before that, he was managing editor of the Akron Beacon Journal and also was consultant for the former Knight Ridder papers. And while in that role, he helped lead a team of Knight Ridder journalists that covered the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina at the Sun-Herald in Biloxi, Mississippi. That paper's coverage won the 2006 Pulitzer Prize for public service. He's also former editor and vice president of the Tallahassee, Florida Democrat. He directed several award-winning reporting efforts, including the paper's coverage of the 2000 election and an in-depth examination of Florida's foster care system. He's visiting the campus. The folks at the College of Media have brought him here. He'll be giving a talk about the changing financial picture of local news this afternoon, 3:30. On the U of I campus. That's in room 213 of Gregory Hall. So if you'd like to stop by, you can. And questions here are welcome to 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Hope people listening will forgive me for asking more questions about the media business, but I'm really interested in your experience with putting out the product online. I think that, when the internet grew and grew. There were more people getting to news that way. So news organizations were saying, either they were saying, we have to be there, or they were saying, well, it's a good thing and we should be there. The problem was they got people used to giving it away.
Absolutely.
And so when it came time to try to charge for it, then we had a lot of people who resisted that. And there had been a test. The Wall Street Journal has always charged for it. They were really the exception. The big test that's still kind of going on is the New York Times. They
right.
put up a paywall some months back, and there was a big question about how many people would actually be willing to pay for access to the paper. And depending on how that worked, other papers, were looking, because everybody is probably thinking about, again, it goes back to the question of, well, how do you pay for the production cost of the product? What do you think about that and about paywalls and about whether people are willing to pay and how do you work that out?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because one of my roles for the parent company of the Evansville Courier and Press, the E.W. Scripps Company, has been to lead a group, a cross-functional group across our company to study that very issue. And I was involved in the launch of a paid model at our newspaper in Wichita Falls, Texas. And we are about a month and a half into that test, and we've learned a number of things. One of the most interesting parts of that process was we had several focus groups with readers of the Times Record News, which is our paper in Wichita Falls, and they, to a person, said quite literally, "What took you so long?" And that really surprised me because their response was, we feel that you serve the community. We're pleased that you serve the community. We know that you've had to cut back on staff and cut back on coverage. And we figured that giving it away was not going to last indefinitely. And so I think that you know, there was a great deal of fear and trepidation among those who subscribe to that digital era theory of information should be free. But I think journalists actually owe a debt of gratitude to Steve Jobs, the recently deceased guru of Apple Computer, for beginning to create a payment model slash subscription economy for content. And by creating iTunes and creating essentially a payment ecosystem for music that turned people away from ripping off music from all over the internet and beginning to pay for it, it's begun to change the mindset of individuals, and we're starting to see this in more and more software companies. When was the last time you bought a boxed version of antivirus software? Now what you buy is you buy a version of antivirus software, and it comes with a subscription. And that subscription entitles you to automatic updates of that software. And so as this subscription economy takes hold in the digital space, I think we're going to see more and more acceptance of digital subscriptions when it comes to content. And again, based on our experience in Wichita Falls, it's something that our readers eventually will expect. Now, I will say this. There is not at this point enough money in digital subscriptions to make it a game changer. In other words, it is not our expectation that digital subscription revenue is going to bear a significant part of the cost of original journalism. It's not proving that at the New York Times, which has announced this week that it wants to offer buyouts to another 20 journalists in its newsroom because of what's happening to the economy. And their subscription model that was implemented this year is widely considered to be a success. But people have not borne the cost of original journalism. And I think that's an important point that people need to remember, is that if the end users truly bore the entire cost of original content, a newspaper subscription, a cable network subscription would cost many times what it costs now.
Yeah. Well, we're sort of coming back around to how do you pay for it, I suppose it always was, at least for a long time, that you paid for your media. And then we had this blip when the internet was just ripping, and it was sort of new when people were getting used to the idea of, you know, you get whatever you want, you get it for free. And now I've asked this question. I'm sure many people ask this question of people in media. Are we going to a time where whatever it is that you want media-wise, you're going to have to pay for it? Everything is going to be some kind of a la carte sort of thing. That seems that the answer to that question is yeah.
The best business model in town right now is that of cable television, because cable television has multiple revenue streams. Cable television receives revenue from cable operators who pay a fee to the cable network in order to carry the network, and that's a per subscriber charge that shows up in your cable bill. Cable networks also have the opportunity to sell advertising, and sell advertising on their own, on their own networks. And they're also increasingly getting into the content syndication business. And so CNN has what is known as the CNN wire, and they sell original CNN content to third parties such as websites and local media organizations such as my own.
We have a caller here, other people are certainly welcome. You have questions, comments, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu, and we have a caller calling from up in St. Charles, and that is line number four, our toll-free line. Hello.
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
I love this. I love you guys are talking about this. I got in a discussion with this a couple weeks ago. People ask me why I'm not buying papers anymore because, well, it wasn't because it wasn't lacking in information. It was because I could never get it on the driveway. The guy kept throwing it, and one of those guys would drive around in a van, just, you know, push the pedal to the metal, so to speak, and throw it, and wherever it lands, and I probably lost half my papers. So, you know, and it was an ongoing thing, and I hear this from a lot of people. The service kind of stinks. The other thing is, you know, by going online, I'm willing to pay that money to read that paper or that article online. What it does is it saves me in two ways. One, I don't have to worry about wet papers or missing papers. And two, I don't have to worry about buying a paper all the time. There's a couple of papers I read from all over the country. I just pay by article or pay, you know, everybody's different, but I can only pay as I go. And that works. To me, it works a hell of a lot better than it does to, you know, get a monthly subscription or a yearly subscription in most cases. And it kind of cuts out the middleman, and I get a dry paper, or should I say dry computer.
Well, you just articulated why, as the editor of a newspaper in the third largest city in the state of Indiana, I still have a listed telephone number. Because people will call me on Sunday morning if their paper is late, if their paper is wet. And we put 21st century technology in the front end of delivering local news and information. But at the very end, it still depends on that individual who is delivering the newspaper to get the fruits of our labor to the reader in an intact condition. And in a timely fashion. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of newspaper publishers are looking longingly at tablets. You can buy a subscription to my newspaper on the Amazon Kindle through the Amazon store. And I find, believe it or not, that I end up reading the Kindle edition because all I have to do is to reach over to my nightstand, pick up the Kindle, it has already downloaded that morning's edition of the newspaper, and I can read 80% of the content in the printed edition without going outside to the newspaper box. But in getting back to the question of how do you pay for it, that what doesn't carry over to the Kindle edition is all of the advertising in the printed edition, and so that's a challenge.
Well, I think it's a great way to go. I'm in the trade, so I do a lot of traveling. Dave knows this. I'm topping up all over the place every time I call him. I'm either in Piatone or Peoria or up here somewhere. But I love it because a lot of times I'm not at my home base and I can read it on my computer and you know, my laptop, and I love it because it's just a convenience, you know, of doing that. And I think why newspapers are kind of going belly up, I don't understand. I would think they would be saving money. For one, you're not using newsprint as much. You're not using the paper, which God knows it's got to be expensive getting that stuff from places like Weyerhaeuser and whatnot. But, you know, I think it's a great way to go, and I think that the technology is going to change so fast that who knows, maybe we'll be seeing it in my car window someday or something. But thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for the call.
I suppose that does raise the question about if you're increasingly distributing electronically, that's going to cut down on your production costs because you don't need presses and you don't need paper. But then why is it that so many papers are having such financial difficulty?
Well, it's a question of when newspapers will be able to hit that inflection point, number one, between the printed newspaper and distributing in digital form. But there's also a very vast gulf in between the amount of money that a local newspaper can charge for advertising in the printed edition and the amount of money a local newspaper can charge for advertising in its digital version. And literally, there's a rule of thumb that for every dollar in print advertising revenue, there is a dime in digital advertising revenue. And so in order for that balance to be reached, we would have to reduce our expenses by 90%. And there's not a 90% reduction in running those old presses. So the presses will be around for a while.
Yeah. One of the big changes that's come about because of the internet has to do with how, you know, the fundamental business of how it is you do what you do and how you distribute your content. In this respect, there was a time, not all that long ago, you were in the newspaper business. Well, you printed the paper, and the news was in the paper, and you distributed that way. If you're a radio station, you had a transmitter, you had a tower, you sat here in front of the microphone, you put your stuff out that way. The television station, they did the same thing. Well, the thing that changed, the internet changed all of that. You can no longer just print papers, talk into the microphone, put the thing out on the television. In the business, this is we talk about this is being across all the platforms.
Absolutely.
Across platforms, which is, again, another one of these big challenges. If you've always been in one kind of business, distributing in one kind of way, that means that you're going to have to learn how to package and distribute the product in a very different way. How are you approaching that at the paper?
Well, one of the things that I'm very blessed with is the ability and the experience to look beyond just the traditional platform. And my university experience was quite formative in that way. I originally went to college with the intention of becoming a newspaper photographer. I soon detoured into radio and worked in campus radio and in professional radio prior to graduation. Most of my professional experience during college was actually in broadcasting. And yet eventually became editor of the campus newspaper and ended up starting my journalism career at a newspaper. And my degree was in magazine journalism. Hmm. And so I bring that background to this idea that in any given community right now, there is a local newspaper. The fortunate community has a public media operation. That public media operation may just be radio. It may be radio and television. There's also the presence of commercial television. There's also the presence of commercial radio. All of those local media organizations are fighting for the same dollar. Now, you may call it underwriting in the public media space. You may call it advertising in the commercial media space, but the reality is there's only so much money in the local market. And then what is happening is that national players, Google, Yahoo, Patch.com, America Online, Yellow Pages, these national operations are hoovering up dollars from local businesses to those national media businesses that have scale. And so the question is, what is to happen to local news and what's to happen to local information? And so my philosophy that we apply is the last one left standing philosophy. I have no idea which way things are going to go. I don't know whether print is going to remain. I don't know whether digital is going to be king. I don't know whether broadcast is going to be king. So I want a staff of local journalists that are conversant in all of those platforms. And so we partner with our local public media outlet to do radio programming, to do television programming. We do video for our website that finds its way onto our public media programs that we partner with WNIN radio and television in Evansville. And we do our best to provide information to people in the form that they want it, because as we were talking about earlier in the program, people are getting information in a multitude of different ways, and the new generation of news consumers are not wedded to that daily newspaper. So I need to be prepared for that day we flip the press off and go to other forms of distribution.
Yeah. Do you think that day, sooner or later, that day will come?
I think it's going to be later. I really do. I believe very strongly that through advances in medical science, that traditional newspaper readers are going to be traditional newspaper readers for a long time, and they still want that.
Yeah. Our guest in this hour of Focus is Mysel Stewart. He's editor of the Evansville Courier and Press newspaper in Evansville, Indiana. And we'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, tracking viruses and the start of pandemics, Nathan Wolf has traveled to the viral hotspots of the world where viruses first jump species from animal to human. His mission is to provide early alerts about deadly viruses. His new book is called The Viral Storm. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here with 10 topics every week. Tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, the guest is Jeffrey Sachs. He's director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University, where he's also professor of health policy and management. We will talk about his new book, The Price of Civilization, Reawakening American Virtue and Prosperity. That is the subtitle. Also tomorrow in the 11 o'clock hour, our guest is Martha Gillette. She is alumni professor of cell and developmental biology here at the U of I, and also is a professor of neuroscience. And one of the things that she's interested in her research is the idea that people have internal biological clocks that have to do with how it is we negotiate our way in the world. And in fact, she'll be giving a talk on the campus on that topic, Adventures in Biological Timekeeping, the Clockwork of the Brain. That's tomorrow. We're here weekday mornings with 10 different topics every week. You can check the schedule, listen to past programs by going to our website, will.illinois.edu. In this hour, we're talking with Mysel Stewart III. He is editor of the Evansville Courier and Press newspaper. He's visiting the campus. The folks at the College of Media brought him. He'll be giving a talk about the changing financial picture of local news this afternoon on the campus, 3:30 in Gregory Hall, room 213. You want to stop by, do that. You certainly can. He's been with the Courier and Press since 2007. Before that, he was managing editor of the Akron Beacon Journal. And before that, was former editor, vice president of the Tallahassee Democrat in Tallahassee, Florida. And I understand your work in newspapering goes all the way back to the third grade.
Oh, yes, it does. Yes, it does.
When you started a paper when you were in the third grade.
I was... I had a situation where a classmate... In the first grade, actually, a classmate's house caught on fire, and I got a bunch of crayons out and literally started drawing a newspaper front page and, you know, probably the ultimate in fabrication. You know, I drew a picture of this house and flame shooting out the window and my, you know, little image of my classmate, you know, screaming fire. And then in the third grade, I thought, you know, let's start a class newspaper. And fortunately, I had a third grade teacher who had the keys to the mimeograph machine. You have to be of a certain age to remember those. And she handed me a Spirit Master and pointed me to a typewriter and said, go to it.
All right. So it's in the blood, no doubt. It must be. We have some other some callers here. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here is a caller in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to know your opinion on whether the newspapers themselves are in some way responsible for their own demise, because I've been reading newspapers all my life, and it seems that they are more and more politically biased the politicization of the news that the newspapers have engaged in, and we have our local News Gazette as one such example, which is quite a right-wing newspaper, and a lot of people don't subscribe to that paper, because of that. So the extreme politicization of the newspapers themselves may be participating in their demise by alienating readership.
Well, one of the things I would suggest to you is that actually newspapers were much more political back in the 30s, the 40s, and the 50s. I used to be the editor of a newspaper called the Tallahassee Democrat, and it was quite literally a Democratic Party organ earlier in its history. And my fondest wish as editor of that paper was I wanted to change the name, because I continue to deal with these questions of bias. And I would say, well, tell me where you see it in the news columns. And they would say, well, it's on the nameplate of the newspaper. And so so there is always going to be a supposition of bias in media. I often say that bias, quite literally, is in the eye of the beholder, and it is up to those of us in the leadership of media organizations to do our best to present the news in a fair manner. Now, I do not subscribe to the notion that of what we call journalistic objectivity. I believe that fairness is a much easier standard. And the reason that fairness is an easier standard is because we are all, as journalists, we are creatures of our upbringing, we are creatures of our backgrounds, and that's why you want to have newsrooms and newsroom staffs that are made up of a diverse group of people who come from different political persuasions, who come from different socioeconomic backgrounds and racial backgrounds, in order to try to present a full and fair portrait of a community. Mm-hmm. But I do think that bias is a frequent issue, and that what we have seen, particularly in the rise of broadcast cable news, has been a sense of, you know, let's create a certain political persona, whether it's Fox, whether it's MSNBC, in order to reflect the audience that they desire.
I don't know. I can give a real quick follow-up if you'd like, caller.
Yeah, could you name a few papers that you think are the most successful at minimizing bias?
I don't think any paper is successful at minimizing bias, because, again, I think bias is present in all media, because the people who make up the media are human beings, and human beings are inherently biased. I think that over time what you have to do is to look at a source of information and over time see how they cover how that source of information covers the news, and being sure that you're separating the editorial opinion of the newspaper from the news pages.
Again, I want to thank the caller. Let's go to somebody else here. This is Champagne, and it's line number 2. Hello.
I have not heard you mention this particular part of newspapers. Some of us are not computer literate. Some of us do not go for the Kindle. Some of us can't read anymore the way we could. And it's wonderful to have the newspaper, biased or unbiased or whichever way you want to put it. I'm probably one of a dying breed, and I say that literally.
Ma'am, I said a little while ago that I don't think print is ever going to go away as long as there are people such as yourself who want it and who cherish it. And
thank you.
I don't care how electronic and how digital we get, as long as there is a desire and an audience for the printed newspaper delivered to your doorstep every morning, we're going to give it to you.
Well, deliver to your doorstep or your front garden.
And if you have any trouble with it, just call Mizell. He's in the book if you have any trouble with the reporter, with the paper getting there. I want to thank the caller very much. We have about 5 minutes here. I want to come back to something that you just touched on, because I know it's certainly a concern that you have, and that is that you want your newsroom in its makeup to resemble the community. that it's reporting on. And I'm sure that for a long time that was an issue. Diversity in newsrooms was a real issue. How do you think papers are doing on that score?
Unfortunately, the economic pressures have really taken their toll on the goal of newsroom diversity. One of the other hats that I wear is I serve on the board of the American Society of News Editors, which is a national organization of editors in newspapers and digital operations. And we once had a goal we called the Parity Project, and we wanted to increase the percentage of journalists of color in the nation's newsrooms to the national percentage by the year 2000. Well, we did not achieve that. It's about 20% people of color in America, about 12% in newsrooms, and so a very wide gulf there, and so that is a goal that that continues. We've extended that deadline, but it is a challenge. But I look at diversity, though, not just in terms of race and gender. I was just speaking with a class a few moments ago, and we were literally talking about all of the different fault lines that are running through our society right now and needing to be careful to have newsroom staffs that also include people who are first-generation college students. People whose parents came from more of a blue-collar, working-class background. The only way we're really going to accurately tell the stories of our communities is to have newsrooms that reflect the community and in all of its levels. And then and when we talk about questions of bias and how we present information and how we present the news, that will be minimized if we have people who come from a variety of different perspectives coming together in a joint effort of putting out the day's news report.
We have, you know, maybe about 3-4 minutes here. Something else I wanted to ask you about, and this perhaps building on the fact that you were part of this team, but you worked for a paper in Ohio. I'm assuming that the Akron Beacon journalist, Akron, Ohio,
yes.
That was part of the Knight Ritter chain, and that you were part of a team of Knight Ritter reporters that went and did some work reporting on Katrina and
yes.
what happened after Katrina. And I remember some of the criticism of the media following that was it was not criticism that they were covering that story, but the criticism was, well, suddenly the media has discovered that there are disadvantaged people in this country and that they're suffering, and that the criticism was made was, well, where have you been, you media guys, where have you been? And this may indeed reflect some people's feeling that that awful lot of the media covers the interests and the perspective of the powerful, and that what we should be doing is, afflicting the powerful and comforting the afflicted. That sort of thing, and that we're not doing a very good job of that.
Well, one of the folks who's on this campus is Leon Dash, who was an award-winning reporter for The Washington Post, and literally made it part of his mission to tell the stories of people who were struggling and to expose the injustices there. And one of the challenges I think that that local media organizations have in the digital era is one of time and one of focus. And I think that most of the scenes of Hurricane Katrina were broadcast day and night on 24-hour cable news networks. And my thing about cable news is that you've got 4 hours of actual news in a typical day, and they spend 20 hours talking about it. And that said, Katrina really took people to a city, as in New Orleans, and took people inside that city in a way that they'd never seen before. And so I think that even though even though the media was criticized for suddenly discovering that. Mm-hmm. The reality is that the media does have a megaphone, and that in that particular instance, when the attention of the nation was focused on New Orleans, it really was able to shine a light on it. What I fault the media for is follow through. Or lack thereof. In other words, once the immediate crisis disappeared, the problems of the poor were largely forgotten, and only to be revisited in anniversary stories that have come since then. And so, I think that the local media organizations have done a much better job, but it doesn't rivet a nation. But the work of a local media organization doesn't necessarily rivet the nation's attention on a problem.
Yeah. I wonder what you think about the criticism that I think people still will make about, you know, an event like that or a lot of other things, that news media does a pretty good job of covering what's happening. But what we're still not doing to the extent that we should is providing context.
Absolutely. Well, and again, I think that is where the digital transformation comes into play. And it's a constant juggling act for us in Evansville, and where literally what we've had to quite consciously do is to separate to some extent the news gathering that takes place for digital platforms and the news gathering that takes place for print. And we've literally taken the opportunity to create a team of people to go deeper and to provide context. And that's where that, for us, that's what that traditional Sunday newspaper represents. And what we've done is to enhance that Sunday newspaper with in-depth journalism on a weekly basis, while at the same time we've got people who are contributing to the daily updates that people increasingly want. But the context and the depth, it takes time, and it really is not something that can be done on internet time, and it's silly to even try.
Yeah. Well, there we will have to stop. We've used the time. I want to again mention for folks who are here in and around Champaign-Urbana that our guest, Mysel Stewart, will be giving a talk about the changing financial picture of local news. That is this afternoon at 3:30 at Gregory Hall on the U of I campus, room 213. His visit here sponsored by the College of Media. And if you'd like to hear what he has to say, you are welcome to stop by. And I'm sure anybody, if you'd like to read the Evansville Courier and Press, it's online.
Courierpress.com.
Our guest, Mysel Stewart III, is editor of the Evansville Courier and Press newspaper in Evansville, Indiana. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Is to separate to some extent the news gathering that takes place for digital platforms and the news gathering that takes place for print. And we've literally taken the opportunity to create a team of people to go deeper and to provide context. And that's where that, for us, that's what that traditional Sunday newspaper represents. And what we've done is to enhance that Sunday newspaper with in-depth journalism on a weekly basis, while at the same time we've got people who are contributing to the daily updates that people increasingly want. But the context and the depth, it takes time. And it really is not something that can be done on internet time, and it's silly to even try.
Yeah. Well, there we will have to stop. We've used the time. I want to again mention for folks who are here in and around Champaign-Urbana that our guest, Mysel Stewart, will be giving a talk about the changing financial picture of local news. That is this afternoon at 3:30 at Gregory Hall on the U of I campus, room 213. His visit here sponsored by the College of Media. And if you'd like to hear what he has to say, you are welcome to stop by. And I'm sure anybody, if you'd like to read the Evansville Courier and Press, it's online.
Courierpress.com.
Our guest, Mysel Stewart III, is editor of the Evansville Courier and Press newspaper in Evansville, Indiana. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Trophy Time in Champaign. Trophy Time features a variety of advertising items, name badges, plaques, and trophies. They can also design and create unique awards for any occasion. Trophy Time, they're more than just trophies. More information is on their new website, trophytime.com.
That is it for us on Focus, but we want you to stay tuned. More coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD3, Urbana. Online at will.illinois.edu. 1 minute before noon Central Time, 45 degrees in Urbana. The sky is cloudy. In Kansas City, December wheat is trading at 714 and a quarter. That's unchanged. March, 729 and a quarter, down one. December wheat in Chicago, 628, up 3 3/4. March, 659 and 3/4, up 1 3/4. December corn, 642 and a half, up 2. March, 651 and a half, up 1/4. May, 657 and a half, down 1/2. July, 661 and a half, down 3/4. November soybeans, 1246 and a half, down 6 1/2. January, 1250 and 3/4, down 9 3/4. March, 1257 and a quarter, down 10 1/2. The May contract, 1260 and a half, down 10 1/2. December soybean meal, 322.70, down 30. December oil, 52.66, down 24. October live cattle, 121.02 and a half, down 32 1/2. December, 123.85, up 20. November feeder cattle, 144.07 and a half, down 35. And December lean hogs, 91.40. That contract is up 70 cents. Outside markets, November crude oil, 88.45. That is up 207. The U.S. dollar, 77.16, up a